Welcome to our broadcast to post episode on sports stadiums and in-venue production. Today, we're diving into the complexities of video walls, graphics, control room equipment, and the myriad challenges of live sports broadcasts. From handling technical setups and managing signal interference to dealing with latency and ensuring reliability in large venues, our discussion will cover the logistical, environmental, and operational pressures that broadcast engineers face. We'll explore everything from the intricacies of coordinating production teams and maintaining seamless technical integration. Let's introduce our guests. First off, we have Stan Fracker, Operational Director for Broadcast and AV at the Detroit Tigers and Red Wings with Illich Entertainment. Stan has extensive experience in managing video productions and overseeing incremental upgrades to stadium and arena technology over the years. Question for you, Stan. Can you give us a behind-the-scenes look at your career and what your day-to-day responsibilities entail?
Sure. I'll try and give you the short version. First of all, thank you very much for having me on. Really, my background is heavy on the producing side. I was with the Detroit Pistons starting in 1997 through all the way through 2013. And in that time, produced our actual broadcast for about 15 years, did the whole travel thing in and out of trucks. And in the meantime, when you're working for a team, you take on a lot of roles too. And I took on one too as an editor too, edited, a variety of content, over the years. And then I shifted last couple of years there, shifted into more of a role of oversight of what we were doing on the in-house side in venue, and overseeing our, content and in-game production from a venue standpoint. Then moved over to the Tigers in 2013. In somewhat of a similar role, director of broadcasting and game presentation for the Tigers, and did that for about 10 years, heavily involved in our control room decisions, equipment purchases. As part of that role, but really much of my focus was the day-in, day-out nature of producing live sports in a venue. And then last year, I had the opportunity to shift over to a role with Illich Sports Entertainment. Our ownership group owns both the Red Wings and the Tigers, and really focus more on the technical side. And so I'm learning now, I think, that, yeah, so I was able to speak engineering pretty well for a producer. Not sure I'm able to pull it off in my day-to-day conversations with our engineering staff, but I'm doing the best I can and just overseeing projects from that standpoint.
Well, it's great to have you join us here. We've also got Sean Hutchinson, the Sports and Live Business Development Representative from Ross Video. Sean optimizes sports workflows and has assisted numerous professional sports teams across the NFL, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, and the NBA with over 20 years of experience as an operator for some of the largest sports teams in the country. Sean has seen how operating shows has evolved. A question for you, Sean, can you share more about your background in sports production and how you've seen the field change over the last few years?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me as well, Steve. So I've been in the business for probably 20 plus years, maybe 25, and most of my focus has really been technical directing throughout the years. So I've spent a lot of times working with, all the different leagues and teams, never taking home shows. I was always an away show guy, and primarily because I really wanted to learn from all the different directors and, the graphics packages, different switchers. I make sure I sort of spread myself out to become that much better. Yeah, there's been a lot of changes over the years, and just to let everybody know, I still do technical direct shows, so I want to keep myself plugged in with what's happening out there so that I can talk to people about other pieces of gear and what have you. But I did take a position with Ross as a full-time business development manager about a year and a half ago, so that's really opened my eyes to a whole different world, right? You're not necessarily on the crew side. You're in front of it all, so you're sort of seeing what's coming down the road, which is really nice to be a part of. But yeah, the changes out there, I mean, there's so many, and we'll talk about them as we go here, but one of the biggest changes I've seen of recent is the running productions, right? So COVID sort of pushed all of us in that direction, and I think all of us have gotten really creative on how we handle productions, and now it's more of a hybrid of not only remote but on-prem, so we're sort of blending the two and seeing where it goes.
That's really good information and fantastic background to dive into this this conversation. Stan, you recently upgraded the video board at the Detroit Tiger Stadium. Can you walk us through the design process, the deployment timeline, and the final fan experience, as well as the decision-making process that you went to select the type of walls that you have?
Yeah. Our previous video board was put in 2012 at Comerica Park. It was a Daktronics board, and it reached its end of life probably pushed it maybe a year beyond that a little bit. We're certainly seeing daily evidence that it was time to replace. In 2022, began our research process on what was the best shape for a board to take place at Comerica Park. And one of the defining characteristics of our ballpark is just the view of the downtown skyline. It's the reason why our ballpark points in the direction it does. And it was very clear to us that we didn't want to do anything to disrupt that. So we did land on keeping the position of our board in left field, so a little, off center. But there's, a strategy behind that. And we wanted to keep the same basic structure in place. What we were able to do, though, is take a look at all the fixed advertising that existed along each side and below it, and say that's where we're going to expand our campus. And so we elected to go with a video board now that's 5,500 pixels wide, and about 3,000 at a certain point tall. It is a bit of an odd shape. It looks like kind of a fat T, but that fits the structure. And we program it in a way that takes advantage of that shape rather than it, looking odd. And give all the credit to our game presentation crew, for really maximizing it. The actual process, though, we get into 2023 at that point. We decided to internalize the process for this week. We knew where we wanted the board. We knew basic parameters of it. And so we managed the RFP process with various vendors. And we took it upon ourselves, myself and our technical director, visited several ballparks that had also just recently undergone a similar upgrade. We went to see the new boards in Pittsburgh, the new board for the New York Mets, and the new board for the Minnesota Twins, all with different manufacturers, and got a firsthand look at not only the cells and how they perform, but also the control rooms too as well, and the integration between the two. And it really put us in the right frame of mind to make the decision as we went through the RFP process. We received strong bids from a lot of vendors. Obviously, we had a good working relationship with Daktronics, but, we were open-minded going into it. And at the end of the day, Daktronics was able to meet all of the terms we were looking for, and we moved forward with them being our partner. And I think it has proven to be, a good choice, a great choice. I mean, the board was delivered on time. It's looked fantastic all season long. We're still in our first season with it. There's always a little bumps along the way, but overall performance, fan enjoyment has been, I think it exceeded our expectations. Fantastic.
That's really cool. I think one of the things that kind of stands out to me is the anamorphic nature of the display and being able to fit it into a shape and design that is unique to your venue, preserving that city skyline and all those kinds of things. The graphics to drive that has got to be really critical. Sean, video walls and the graphics driving them have significantly transformed the in-game experience. What has been your experience with these newer workflows, and what advice would you give to a team looking to add more screens or compelling graphics or these anamorphic displays to their stadium programming?
I think it's impressive with what people come at us with and everybody with in terms of these crazy displays, right? And it's not just one display. It's a ton of displays inside, outside the venue. And you think about even the floors, right? I had the luxury of managing the NBA All-Star game at Lucas this past season. And one of the things that they implemented was an LED floor. It was really impressive. They actually had players that would run across the floor, and then their tracking system now sparkles to trail behind them. There's just a lot of different things that you can do. And then recently, the Sphere in Vegas, that was a pretty, if you haven't been to the Sphere and seen the inside of that place, you've got to get out there and see it. It's the most immersive experience I think I've ever experienced. And, yes, the LED boards are getting bigger, better, resolution's better, you've got HDR, but you really have to be strategic in how you place these boards. It can't just be all over the place. You've got to have a plan as to why you're putting it in and what the ultimate goal is. But again, it's driving all these boards with content, right? That's what we do. We somehow spin this stuff up and play it out there, and you have to think about the real time aspect of it. So you've got all this data that flows in and pushes content to these boards, and it can't be this pre-rendered content. I know that like Stan can attest to this, but there are some pre-rendered layers that they do use facility, but then in front of those pre-rendered layers, there's all this dynamic changing material that allows everything to stay up to date, right? So I think that's really, really critical. So you need some kind of real-time render engine that can actually adjust to what's happening and play that content out to the boards.
Cool. So that kind of leads to the more general discussion around the trends technology-wise and display-wise that are going on. People moving to HDR, going to UHD type of displays, like we've already talked about with the anamorphic. All this high data rate display information, it struggles under traditional 12 gig, 3 gig infrastructures. Maybe if you could talk a little bit about how protocols like SMPTE-2110 are helping with that, either bringing a facility up to date or enabling some of these new technologies to be deployed. And that also includes things like audio with the advances of Dante and those kinds of things. If you could maybe explain a little bit about your experiences and what you would advise teams, what advice you would give to teams in planning for these kinds of room upgrades with these kinds of high data rate video experiences in mind.
Yeah, so there's a lot to cover here, but you know, as far as 2110 is concerned, that's a big topic. I mean, you've got your standard SDI baseband, your NDI, your 2110, and the big question that is posed to these teams is what do we go with? Where do we go to protect our investment? And I think that you know, as awesome as 2110 is, I think people do pull back a bit because of the complexity and the cost. I think over time that cost will drop significantly, and then you layer on the learning curve, right? It's a huge learning curve, and I think we're getting there. I mean, if you think about, you know, HDR, 4K, even 8K now, and then SMPTE-2110, there's a lot to digest. And I think people need to be careful, especially the ones like Stan making the decision. They need to make intelligent, smart decisions. They need to collaborate with, you know, with the SIs. They need to collaborate with the vendors and sort of pull it all together so they make good decisions. But, you know, you've got your algorithms that are shrinking content and making it easier to pass, you know, files through small codecs. You got to think about the ingesting process, the transcoding process, the distribution process. I mean, there's a lot of components to make all this work.
Stan, how did that impact your decision-making for your upgrade at the Tiger Stadium?
No, it was a significant part of, you know, our decision-making to, you know, right off the top. It's okay, what is the format going to be? We're coming from, we're a 1080i environment, right? So, you know, 1080i SDI. We knew we wanted to upgrade our signal quality. And so then you're talking 1080p versus 4K. Did a lot of research in that area where trends are going and whether it was worth justifying the additional cost. And also too, for the user experience. I mean, what is the difference between what 4K looks like on our video board and what, 1080p. We did, through that research, land on it. It wasn't worth the incremental cost for us. 1080p, not only more cost effective, but simply from an infrastructure standpoint, and to be able to handle, data rates and everything that, I think of it terms, as an editor too, one size files am I working with, and the processing power needed for it, all of that. But on the IP side, we were encouraged by the fact that when we first started looking at this, the delta between going 2110 versus SDI seemed also significant for what we were trying to achieve. A year later, as we got in the process, those costs seemed to come down quite a bit, just in 1 year. And that changed the equation for us, because now we're talking about, okay, if the costs aren't too significantly different, this is an opportunity to future-proof ourselves to a certain standpoint. We like that a lot. We're not making a 4K decision now, but if we're going to do it, within this next 10 years, we'll have the ability to do that with a 2110 infrastructure. The scalability of it too is a factor. The ability to utilize the new technologies as they come on and have a little bit more plug and playability. I'm oversimplifying there, but I think we understand the benefits that come along with 2110. And that pushed us to make a decision to go ahead and go 2110. Have all the trepidation that John mentioned as in terms of staff. Like, that's a real concern of mine. I'm trying to educate myself as much as I can, We're all, on this empty website trying to, update our knowledge base as much as we can, from an engineering standpoint. But we're also excited about it and the opportunity it presents to us.
That's a great insight, and appreciate you sharing that with us. That's one of the key things in making the decision is for a particular workflow, how well is it going to work? What does it really bring to the table? It's quite fascinating to me that all the set-top manufacturers, all the display manufacturers want to push UHD, but HDR in 1080p really makes enough of a difference that seems to be the real driver in sports.
I'll tell you, on the HDR front, we haven't yet we got the new board this past year, and in our 1080i environment, SDI, we elected, okay, we're not biting off, HDR. We also have still some legacy boards too that aren't HDR capable, so we were concerned about the contrast there. We still have that decision to make too, whether HDR is right for us. I will say, just in talk, the best way to learn is just talking to other teams that are experiencing these things. HDR is a real challenge for everyone that I talk to. Experience. I'm not speaking from experience, sort of conveying, when we talk to others, and the matching of colors from the edit box to the actual display, there's challenges along the way, and that one we are carefully considering as well too. Is the juice worth the squeeze, so to speak? It seems like people that do well with it are very happy with the results, and so that's intriguing to us too. Although we haven't yet made a decision on that.
Yeah, one thing. Excuse me, you're Steve. One thing I will add to what Stan just said too is, there are a number of teams, a good half dozen that I can think of off the top of my head that do HDR, and I would encourage everyone to reach out to us and talk to those folks, because they have gone through the learning curve of it all. They're extremely happy now that they've overcome that hurdle with the product that's being delivered. So yeah, please reach out and chat with us, and we can certainly pair you up with the right people.
Great. Maybe you could go on a little bit more, Sean, and talk a little bit about the advantages that hyper-converged platforms provide in making those decisions and enabling future technologies to be easily deployed or cost-effective, as well as cost-effectively deployed.
Sure. I mean, well, so, I'll talk about our product. We have a hyper-converged product, which is, essentially a platform that you can add things on to. So one of the big concerns with trucks, especially the stadiums and the arenas, is to where do we put all this gear, right? So the rack rooms are getting bigger. There's more needs, more boxes for what we're trying to accomplish. So how do we shrink that down in size and make sense of it all? So one thing that we have begun to do is take our products and blend them, merge them together in one box, if you will. So right now we have something called the Ultrix, which is really a router with switcher blades inside of it. And what's really nice is that you can actually have multiple switcher blades and treat those as different systems. So what have I essentially done at this point? I have taken the cabling out of the equation, right? I'm not cabling from a switcher to a router and back. It's all with inside the system itself. When you think about a control room that needs an audio mixer, you could potentially rid that console, which we really use just to listen levels on during a game, and put that mixing capability in the box. When you think about scaling and stitching these massive boards together, we typically had a product that was an isolated product, and you might have multiple of these boxes to bring that to life. Well, now we can take those and actually put them into the box. So when you start shrinking this down, it becomes a very appealing product to people, and allows you to grow, right? So there are a lot of people that will say, I don't need all this right now. Well, think about the shell right now and then add as you go. You don't need to buy it all now, but think beyond what you're currently doing. And a lot of people need to really understand that to protect their investment.
Yeah. I think that's one of the key. Go ahead, Stan.
Yeah, to follow this. So we have, we have a full ROS, CMS system, content management system, right? At the ballpark that we put in as part of the board. So that was kind of the part two of the decision making out of board. Electronics for the actual video board itself, and then we had to decide on the content management of it. And just to speak to Sean's point, like the part we bit off last year was, we're gonna have this fantastic new board. We're still gonna have a 1080i control room. Where can we maximize the experience for our fans? And it was through the RAW system in being able to do pixel for pixel displays of graphics, special videos. We built in full resolution, our open video and other special content that we play from the raw system. And just as Sean said, yeah, it is all stitched together, you know, amazingly so, and allows us to do full resolution, 5500 wide, you know, 5500 pixel wide content. And that is, you know, thanks to, you know, what Ross is basically, you know, was able to create and put in place for us and allow us to, you know, yeah, we up and burn on the 1080 side when we go live, still looks really good. But we know next year, you know, on the control room side, we'll be able to kind of live up to the expectation we're setting on the, you know, the content display side that Ross has provided for us.
How did that impact your decisions on the switcher and switcher functionality?
Yeah, it's a process we're literally going through it right now as we look into next year. And certainly the commitment we've made to ROS, you know, means we need to have a strong, you know, ROS talk system in place. Now, when you look at ROS, right. I get for a little plug for Sean. So this is, integral to our decision making. Having said that, we know ROS has been kind enough to get that technology to sprint. You know, to other switcher manufacturers that take advantage of it, and you want to make the right choice for you and from a compatibility standpoint, user friendliness, and all of these things in consideration. But ROS is a strong possibility for us as well as we consider options.
I didn't pay him to say that, Steve.
Yeah, right.
So one of the other things that's happening a lot is in the sports analysis part. Can you maybe talk a little bit, Sean, about the impact that is having on sports broadcasting in general and on in-venue production using a hyper-converged system?
Well, so you talked a little bit about sports analysis. I think it's really important to understand who our audience is. I think there's a really big shift going on between the people who have attended sporting events over the years and who's coming in to see these sporting events, right? There's a big differentiator between millennials and Gen Zs. They think differently. They want different experiences. So one of the tools that we've introduced some time ago was Piero, which is really a sports analysis tool. So, you know, the younger crowd goes in, they may not understand the game. This becomes a tool, a visual tool that sort of pairs up with the words. So you can talk about something all day long, but if you're not accompanying it with visuals, it makes it that much harder to understand. So I think Piero, you know, with your first and 10 ability, AR, augmented reality that might float around on the grass or the field, I should say, you know, these are all really important components that I think play a key part in any game.
That's a very good point. It kind of ties in, Stan, to how you're deploying technology, the advantages that it gives you in attracting your fan base, as well as using the venue for other functions. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that from your perspective?
Yeah, well, I've done the follow up on Jean's point. You know, it's interesting because you can kind of approach it a little cynically in venue. Like, hey, you don't have an announcer kind of describing the graphics you're putting up, and so like how. You know, should we even be replicating what you might see on a broadcast? Is it too complex to messaging to kind of convey for your fans if you don't have the associated, you know, play-by-play announcer kind of walking you through it? But we found, you know, through a lot of what Ross has provided us this year, is fans are really engaged with it. You know, we make sure we sit amongst the crowd, we see whether they're paying attention to spray charts for batters and the way they interact, the way we're nearly immediately after a home run is hit, being able to show exit velocity, launch angle, and graphically display it in a way that's very interesting without having an announcer kind of also narrate it to you, it's still very impactful. And so that's been a great addition to the ballpark and something we utilize on a regular basis. Other technology enhancements that just kind of maybe a little bit more basic level or things like selfie cams where fans are able to use, their own mobile technology and being able to take that and provide a fun experience for fans. We're now all of a sudden, instead of having our, five live cameras, that we have in the ballpark, now we have, 600, the people that have logged on and are choosing to engage with that. So that's another kind of fun addition and, runs a gamut of the ballpark. And the thing is, you just have to be aware of, all the tools at your disposal and that continue to kind of challenge yourself from a technology standpoint.
That's amazing. I can't believe the level of fan engagement that you've obviously achieved and sitting amongst them to see how they're reacting and the whole selfie thing with the displays in the background really says something. Tell me a little bit about the biggest challenges you see in production today and what suggestions you can offer to others entering into this field.
Yeah.
No problem. Yeah, we can see you now. So, okay, I was just asking Sean to talk a little bit about the biggest challenges he's facing in sports broadcasting and production today, and what suggestions he would give to someone who's looking to enter into the field. You know, the newbie. We got to train some new guys to come in because some of them didn't.
Well, this is about a 2-hour conversation, Steve. Yeah. So attrition's a big one, right? I mean, we're seeing such a shift, and I think it really started from COVID. So many people left the industry because they had no idea what the future of what we do is, right? And it's like, how do we bring these new people in and drop them into a situation that requires experience? It's not easy to do. You also have to think about people who are aging out, right? We've got a lot of folks out there that are getting to a point where they're ready to retire and move on. And you've got these young people coming in that have literally no experience. I mean, there's obviously a pool of them out there, but we need to devise better ways to get these people trained up. For instance, I was cutting shows out of my house during COVID. So I had a switcher, I have all my multi-viewers, and I have 3 daughters, and not one of them could care less about what I do. Up until the money came up, right? When the money was brought up, all of a sudden there's interest, and it can't be about that. It has to be about a passion. And as a former trainer with Ross, where I did spend a lot of my career training folks at different facilities, it's interesting to see how quickly you can pick out those people who have a thirst for this, right? And you want to lean on those people and bring them up and train them in what we do. But yeah, there's so many things we have to think about. Retention. How do we get people to the ballpark? You know, the stadium, whatever. A lot of these people now are fed up with traffic. They're fed up with food prices. They're fed up with this. They're fed up with that. So we're doing what we can from a technology standpoint to make that experience better than being at home. So, you know, that's a really big question, Steve. I mean, I could go on for hours about this, but sure. I think we really need to pay attention to that portion of this business.
What about you, Stan? What would you recommend to someone who's looking to get into this industry and somebody that maybe you would like to shepherd along in your facility? What kinds of things would you want them to get involved with and learn and be very competent at?
Yeah, I would say, well, definitely, you know, get on the forefront of new technologies, because that's, you know, Sean's right. It's, you know, that's where the challenge comes into play. It's amazing what we do to ourselves, right? You know, and just constantly, you know, pushing the technological envelope, not letting us sort of breathe for a while and adjust to whatever format we just, you know, created before we're on to the next one. And ultimately, it's a good thing. It provides a good fan experience from the engineering and backside of it, though that's can be a bit of a challenge. And so I'd say anybody that's coming into it, you know, yes, educate yourself on 2110. Learn the ins and outs of it. It is, you know, to be honest with you, that's also the challenge too. It's hard to say that, you know, point to, you know, a veteran engineer hasn't had experience with it. How much knowledge can they pass along now to something that's a new way of distributing video? There's obviously it's helpful to have the previous engineering background, but it's a challenge to overcome. It's a new way of thinking. You're not part of a bash can thing. So I would say, yeah, for anybody coming in, educate yourself on the new technology and, you know, become, you know, expert level as fast as you can. And the amazing part is there's a ton of tools, you know, at your disposal that you can, you know, that you can take on individually. You know, training videos, courses at SMPTE, I think are valuable. I'd encourage you that way. You know, from the other side of it is just, you know, people already in the industry is, yeah, great. Embrace new technology, find the right fit for your organization and continue to be, you know, a leader within your organization.
Great. One of the things, Steve, I'd like to just add, said Stan, I think we also need to think about the schools out there. There's a lot of broadcasting type schools that need that channel, that connection with the Stans of the world, right? So I think we need to think more about how do we make that connection between them. And I know we're working on a program to bring people together because there's a definite need and there's definite want from some of these students.
That's a very good point. That's one of the reasons why KeyCode actually offers some training programs. We have an educational division to help support production efforts to train people, and a number of those courses are approved now for the state of California for continuing education. Sean, I've got one other quick question for you before we jump to the audience questions. Can you talk a little bit about the trends that you're seeing in cameras for sports production?
There's so many different types of ideas coming to market. I mean, one of the biggest ones for me out of the gate is aerial cameras. You know, a lot of people think it's only for the NFL, and it's obviously not. There's ways you can use these aerial cameras, and you really give the viewer a different perspective on the field, on the subject, right? So, you know, we personally have 4-point systems, we have 2-point systems, we have, you know, different configurations we can use for big venues, smaller venues. But if it's something that, you know, if people are trying to enhance their overall production, I would definitely lean on that. And then you accompany that with tracking systems, and you get some really, really cool effects, right?
Exactly. Well, and I think that's really important. And it ties back to that fan engagement. The more visually appealing the production is, the more angles that you get, the more engaged the fan seems to become. And of course, that drives attendance, that drives revenue, all those good things.
And you can sponsor it, Steve, and you can sponsor it.
There you go. I was going to touch on that, but there you go. At the end of the day, it's all about getting people in the seats and having them spend some money there, and getting the advantage of having eyes on those screens when those advertisements come up, and having sponsors derive some benefit from that. Great. All right. I think we're ready to dive into some audience Q&A now. We've got a question here from Andy, and we'll give this one to Stan. While building content for a game, how do you program content for the show? Is there a lot of distribution of content to different players? How do you go about getting that all set up?
Yeah. You know, it kind of depends on the sport you're in too, and your opportunities to, refresh your content with players. Baseball prevents a unique challenge. They play almost every day. And so opportunities to shoot, new content with players can be a bit of a challenge. So you do put a lot of baseball teams, Tigers included, put a lot of emphasis on spring training and the content that's acquired at that time. You try and get, headshots and all the fun that, we use the term gladiators, in the industry, both broadcast and in game and venue. And that's, the fun animated footage of players, on a high quality set, often with some kind of LED imagery behind them. We've done pyro over the years, all that fun stuff. That's where I've seen real growth over the years, in our industry is amount budgeted towards shoots like that continues to grow and grow each year, because it's just an expectation to have these high cinematic quality footage of your players that you can roll in for their headshots as part of your open videos, and then throughout the game, as you build highlight packages. So you put a lot of effort and focus into that in spring training, along with all the fun stuff that you see the interviews with players about trending things that are going on. You get their fun takes on on music videos or their favorite movies, and all the fun stuff that you see when you go to the ballpark. You need to put a special emphasis on that. And it's really, from a baseball standpoint, it's building for an entire season, understanding you're trying not to replicate the same experience for a fan that goes to maybe 2 games in a row, or the same game within the homestand. And when you start to add it up, the amount of inning breaks you have, everything that you do, that's a lot of content. And our organization's put a special focus on making sure that's, fresh on a daily basis. And you do have to have team of editors, a team of producers, that is top of mind and a focus for them from the in games.
Excellent. This is kind of a follow-on question to that from Paul. He's asking if you're using a built-in AI search engine for finding visuals to use during the live events. And he also asked about Dante, if you're using that and how you're syncing your audio and video for live events.
Yeah, I will say yes, we do utilize Dante. And this is, I mentioned at the beginning of this about how I'm challenged sometimes on my engineering knowledge. I couldn't give you a full breakdown of the uses of Dante. We do utilize Dante extensively here at the arena. We're bringing it to Comerica Park you know, as well, and understand that's, you know, where we're heading from an audio distribution standpoint. I'm sorry, and the first question was?
It was, are you using AI to search your...
This is a great example of when we talk about like, hey, gaps of, you know, gaps of knowledge kind of gets me to use it custom a certain way. So I mentioned that I was at so it's 22 years or whatever of my career, was hands-on with a lot of Jesus or opens, these things. At no point during that time was AI something that entered into the picture. And it seems like it's kind of been a recent development over the last 2 years, which is kind of when I, you know, stopped personally editing a lot. So I do see its impact, and I'm amazed at what can happen in a short amount of time with it. And I know it's still in an exploratory phase, with our editors as we're learning, what's within bounds and what you're, able to create, and still have it be of, a benefit and an enhancement to what you're doing and not a sideshow to what you're doing. I think that's the real trick that we're all still sort of learning, but is it a part of the process? Absolutely.
Okay. Sean, I'm going to throw this one to you. The question is, what has been the most impactful technological innovation you've seen in sports production, and how has it changed the way teams approach in-venue broadcasting?
Well, I think there's been a lot of changes over the years, but I guess I'm going to leap forward and say that I think AI is going to change a lot of what we do. And to, Stan's point, this isn't a replacement tool. I don't see it as that. I see people thinking that way, but I see it more of an enhancement, as you mentioned, Stan, to what we're currently doing. When you can start leaning on AI to, build a package for you within a show and play that back very quickly. When you can have AI drive cameras, not that you're necessarily using a camera operator, but there might be some cameras that are driven by AI. I think that in itself, leaping forward is going to be what really changes our industry. We talk about hyperconverge, we talk about Pierre, we talk about all these products that we have and we utilize. And they certainly have made a big impact, but I think AI is really going to change things for all of us, and hopefully in a very positive way.
Hopefully so. Here's one that we've kind of already touched on it, but Sean, why don't you talk a little bit about more of this, and Stan, I think you maybe have some impact or some input on this and its impact as well. This is from Dave. He says, Kiss Cam is getting a bit outdated. What are some of the newer trending in-stadium programming techniques that you are seeing in stadiums and that you are actually deploying? And that would be for you, Stan.
It's been a few years, I think, since we've done actual Kiss Cam. But I will say, one thing we did, I feel like it's been about 3 years now or 2 to 3 years since we implemented this, is we worked with Ross in creating, basically a random cam animation piece that we could instantly change, and so we could capture, transits or something that was happening that made sense, or an idea that came to us, that morning. We could put it in effect that night and have an animated graph ready to go to lead into whatever special cam we're doing. And so that has run the gamut from, rally cam. We ask people to turn, turn their hats around for it, specific dance cams, cams based on characters from TV shows. I'm right now, as I'm rattling these off, I take credit for our game presentation team. Does a fantastic job with these, and creates new and special cams with it. And then the other point is, that's one inning break, but another is about interactive games. We worked with Ross quite a bit in developing almost game show quality kind of animations and looks for that, that 60 seconds, 90 second piece that you run in between innings, where you have the host doing a trivia style game, but now it has a presentation of, Wheel of Fortune or the Match Game, or other, game shows that we've become familiar with over the years.
Okay, great. This one is from Cliff. And Stan, maybe you can answer this one a little bit. He's asking, what is the average integration time for a stadium project such as your LED upgrade? What he's asking is what was the projection versus what the reality was?
I think for us, I think we challenged that timeline a bit. We really, as I mentioned, 2022 was when we began to focus on the need for it, and doing the work on our end, but we did not have the actual board manufacturer and Ross, selected and given the full go until July of last year. And we had the board in place prior to opening day. So the, about a week, 2 weeks prior to opening day. So that would put mid late March. In baseball, that's kind of stretching the timeline, especially baseball in Delaware City. that's pushing the timeline a bit. I think we definitely saw that. But to the credit of Ross and Dectronics, they delivered and got it done.
Okay. Sean, I think this one will go to you. You mentioned earlier that you've seen a lot of change with Remy. And this one's from Tom. He's asking, how realistic is it to have a significant portion of your live team working from a remote location? And how do you manage that in terms of reliability and communication?
Well, it's hard to say where it goes. I mean, I know that the some of the regional sports networks have sort of mandated that, producers and directors stay at home. The TD, the A1, usually one replay op and a tech manager who sit in the truck, right? And everybody else can be at home doing shows or back at the studio in their hometown. So it's really hard to see or say which way it's going to go. But I think, again, as I mentioned earlier on, I think it's going to be a hybrid of this mechanism, if you will, long term. I think that if we can figure out how to deliver traffic over the internet better, lower latency, which again, latency has been an issue, but I think a lot of people have gotten past that that hurdle. They sort of know how to time things out when they're calling a show. But if we can minimize that in due time, and I think we will, you might see more of a swing in that direction. So I love it. Hey, who doesn't like being at home doing a show, right?
Sure. So, okay, Stan, this will come back to you. The question is from Jeff, and he wants to know if you've done any migration to the cloud or a hybrid on-prem versus cloud, and what your thoughts are around that.
Yes, we are, for the most part, on-prem. Like, we made significant, investments in on-prem storage for video production purposes and have leaned in that direction. Having said that, the work at home environment, kind of creates the need for, something beyond what we're doing on, and, the cloud would be one direction to go. We, we're a club organization that has all the IT, limits that are, I shouldn't say limits, but, the fun that comes along with, working with your IT department and creating a structure that's safe. And so what that means is, hey, a VPN network. Well, everybody knows, moving files over a VPN can be a challenge for video editors. So we do experience that, and there's, workarounds. While we've invested in the network storage and has been had a great impact on us, we're still in the process of identifying the right digital asset management system, for our needs. And I know organizations, at least the teams I talk to, are kind of at varying levels on that. And we're looking for the right one that works for us. That is, we're a 12 month a year now, organization. We've dabbled in CADDV a little bit over the years, and a couple others, and simply just having a really strong file folder structure. But we know we're at the point where we need to expand into, something that offers, both more robust on the cloud side and simply just as an organizational tool.
That's good insight. There's a follow-on to that from Jeff that he's asking, how are you filtering and tagging your content for later quick use, especially in the cinematic type of acquisition instead of the usual broadcast acquisition?
Yeah, these are all areas we kind of identified we need to do better with. We have put too much in the hands of our editors and basically the working memories, of what our content is. So our it's interesting. Yeah, you asked the question because we've done a lot of research in this area and are still moving towards what the right solution would be for us. But we do have some capabilities on the production side, so in our control rooms, tagging through dream catchers, tagging process on the replay system here at Little Caesars Arena. We're still EBS over at the ballpark too, and just through naming conventions, we're to accomplish what we need. But of the digital asset managers that we explore, there's a lot of great options And it's we're still in the process of signing on the right one for us.
Okay. Got one more question here before we run out of time. Are you seeing problems with wireless devices, both camera and audio, in terms of interference from new technology that is in your RF spectrum?
We actually have an ongoing problem we're trying to solve. Right, it sounds like somebody might be at our ballpark on a daily basis. I'm firing up something. Some wireless. Look, it's a challenge to manage and. We have had, as we've expanded into this space, the number of pieces of gear that are operating in the RF spectrum. We've run into more conflicts this year than we ever had before, and it's simply I think it's a direct result of the volume of equipment that we're running up on a regular basis is operating wirelessly, as well as just understanding other technologies that may be in the area and trying to get a handle on everything that is. That's working at once. So yeah, it's a so I guess the answer is yes, I think.
It's a challenge and it's ongoing. All right. I've got one last thing I've got to put in here is you got a comment here from Ballantyne. He says commercial is looking really good this year. Good job, Stan. So you've got some fans out there.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. And if you're interested in learning more about sports solutions from Ross Video or exploring products from the over 400 lines that Keycode Media represents, please feel free to contact Keycode Media. And if you enjoyed this content, don't forget to like and subscribe to our channel for more insights and updates. Thanks again for joining us, and thank you, Stan and Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow Keycode Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV broadcast and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.